And now, Forward with Falk. Join Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen as they navigate their way through the political thicket. Well, we're back in the Supreme Court, Dave. They've got three important cases that they've got to deal with. There's been a lot of commentary about these cases. Trump appealing Jack Smith's prosecution. Trump appealing the cases brought against the January 6th people, the law under which it was brought. And, of course, Trump appealing the Colorado case, which knocked him off the ballot. And appealing whether or not the 14th Amendment applies to the president. And there have been a lot of very interesting comments about these cases. What's your take?
Well, I'll start with Colorado, because there's a lot of layers to that that apply not only to that case, but to jurisprudence in general. The first thing that we're talking about is that this is a constitutional interpretation that's never had to be made before. No one has ever invoked Section 3 of the 14th Amendment.
No president ever tried to overthrow the government.
That's why it's never been tried before.
Right.
I guess the only president that ever tried was Jefferson Davis. He was president of the Confederacy.
Right.
But interestingly enough, he never was convicted of a crime. And I believe he was later pardoned. I'm not sure, but he was never convicted of a crime, which is one of the issues that's up there. But Trumpian defense. One of the things is that number one, that the courts shouldn't be deciding things; that elections should be decided by the voters, which of course is rank hypocrisy, considering that after the 2020 election, Donald Trump brought over 60 cases to the court to try to overturn the election.
Right.
As a matter of fact, just as a sidebar here, in Michigan, they just found a tape of Donald Trump trying to convince the appropriate authorities not to certify the vote in one county, which would have made the difference in the Michigan election. But getting back to the courts and the issue of courts. I hear some commentators saying, well, there was never any due process here.
What do you mean there was no due process?
I know, it befuddles me, because in fact there was a court hearing in which both sides presented testimony. And by the way,
it lasted 5 days. The court hearing lasted 5 days. They presented testimony. They presented exhibits. They presented witnesses.
Right. And the case was brought by Republicans. It wasn't brought by Democrats. It was brought by that and the Heritage Foundation. And it was briefed by very conservative, right-wing, formerly Republican judges, including Michael Luttig.
Those guys are now being attacked as left-wing activists by the MAGA crowd.
Right.
If Michael Luttig is a left-wing activist, I can't possibly imagine what members of the Democratic Socialists of America could be.
They're off the spectrum. They're off the spectrum, but we get into the issue of interpretation. Now, the interesting part was the court that had the hearing found that Donald Trump was guilty of insurrection, but that it didn't apply to him because he wasn't an office
officer of the United States, exactly.
There's a couple things to be said about that. If the president of the United States isn't an officer, I don't know who is.
But the Constitution, in one clause, speaks about the office of the president.
Yes.
Isn't the person who holds the office of the president therefore an officer?
Yes, it should be. And in fact, Donald Trump, in I believe the Georgia case, is seeking immunity because he is an officer. What you just said, he's an
officer. So in Colorado, he's not an officer, but in Georgia, he is.
Yeah.
Okay.
However, let me throw this in. Apparently, when that part of the amendment was being considered, One version did specifically set out the president. The final version did not. It talked about members of the of Congress and other officers. And of course, but it doesn't, they took out the word president. So if anybody wants to hang their hat on it, they said they had their opportunity and they took it away. So that for purposes of the 14th Amendment, president shouldn't apply. I mean, that's just an argument. I don't think that that'll hold, but it is out there. It's a small little branch to grab hold of. Then we have the issue of originalism and strict interpretation of words and what have you. And that gets back to what's an insurrection. Now, the you know, there's already been a finding by the court that that Trump was guilty of insurrection. I happen to
and think that they all agreed on in Colorado. Yeah, that was not where they disagreed.
Right. However, as I just mentioned a little while ago, there was never a conviction of Trump for insurrection. He wasn't charged technically with insurrection in these cases. I mentioned the Jefferson Davis case where he was barred from obtaining office, even though he was never convicted of insurrection. The other thing about that is
he wasn't tried for insurrection either.
Yeah.
He was never put on trial.
Yes. The other thing is the other part of the clause talks about aid and support of insurrection. And I think that's where Donald Trump certainly fits, because he's the one that directed that crowd to go up there. He told them to fight like hell, or you're not going to have a country anymore. He wanted to go up there himself. And while they were there, when all these people from Congress and from his family and from outside were calling him and saying, call off this mob, do something, he did nothing for hours. So I think that that's where he might fall in.
Does the American jurisprudence take into account sins of omission as well as sins of commission? I guess crimes of omission.
Well, in this case, supporting can be, I think, an omission, because he had a duty to defend the Constitution.
He had an affirmative duty which he shirked.
Yes.
Okay.
Although he has tried to say, well, I have different wording about support and this or that, but whatever.
I mean, in the oath.
Right. Yeah, so it's going to be interesting to see how these originalists and these strict constructionists try to get around the strict construction and original wording of this matter. It hasn't gone up to the Supreme Court yet, but it's going to, and I think they have to take it. And
then a number of liberal commentators, legal commentators, including some judges, have written articles in the recent weeks about this case, and they say that the court should find for Trump, but they should find for Trump in such a way that he will appear on the ballot, but he will be adjudged having committed an insurrection, being guilty of insurrection. And the reason has nothing to do with the law. The reason has to do with legal politics.
Politics,
because the court can't afford. The country is so split that there's no point in the strict administration of the law if there's no law. Therefore, the court has to find a way to do something that nobody will like, but everybody will accept, which allows the court to go forward and the legal system to go forward. And that would require that Trump be on the ballot, but be slapped down.
Well, that's not what the Constitution says.
No, they nobody denied. That's not their point.
Right.
That's not their point.
Political point. And that's what, and that's the other tension there. You know, as a political matter, what happens? And I think that there's different degrees of nuance there as well. If the court is being political, and if they've been looking around and they've been seeing what's happened to Republicans since 2020, losing election after election after election because of Donald Trump, a political court could say, hey, this is our opportunity to get rid of them. and to reconstitute the Republican Party in his movement, but without his him being the baggage. Now, I don't think that that's going to happen, but that's pretty Machiavellian, but there's a possibility. The other argument is keep him on the ballot because the backlash would be so great that it would be bad for the country to take him off the ballot, despite the fact that he violated the Constitution and should not be on the ballot. And then the backlash to that, or the counterargument to that, is, well, whatever happened to no man is above the law? And
I tell you what happened to it. It was never true.
Of course, it was never true. But then the counter to that is the Ruth Ben-Ghiat argument about strongmen and fascists. And that is that the way you have to deal with them is to disempower them. And it's to punish them and to put them in jail. And as happened to Berlusconi in Italy and Bolsonaro in Brazil, and that removes their power base, or removes them from having a of being seen as all powerful, and it takes the aura away from them. So we have all these multiple different ways of looking at this thing, and I think the question is, if the Supreme Court takes it.
Well, there's no doubt that they'll take it, right?
Yeah. How are they going to list it, or how quickly are they going to get to it? And that's another issue. And as a matter of fact, that's an issue now on some of the other cases that have been appealed to the Supreme Court. We had the fact that they turned down Jack Smith for an expedited hearing on the issue that he wanted to have, and they sent it back to the circuit court. Well, the circuit court is going to have an expedited hearing within less than 2 weeks. January 9th, they're going to have the hearing. They're going to issue an opinion pretty quickly. They've been doing that in these cases. And then it's going to be right for the Supreme Court again. But again, all of this isn't going to happen until at least February. And don't forget that the first trial, the Judge Chutkan trial, is set for March 4th. So I think that's
not going to happen, is it?
That's not going to happen. So we have all of these different layers. Oh, the other thing I want to talk about is, the Colorado case. Are they going to limit it to Colorado? Or are they going to, because all these other states, matter of fact, we're waiting to see what Maine does, have rejected that idea. Minnesota rejected it. There's a bunch of others. Have rejected whether Trump's name can appear on the ballot. So that...
Well, the Colorado case is very interesting, because if you look at the way that the Colorado High Court, not the first court, but the appeals court, the way they settled it was really following the argument of one of these, of the people who argue that you got to find some legally imperfect but politically savvy way of handling this matter. Because the three dissenters, the story said, well, the Democrats, it was partisan, the liberals voted that he should be off the ballot, the conservatives voted that he should be on the ballot. They didn't vote that. What the dissenters voted was that the court couldn't decide it. They said that this was, that although it was true that he engaged in insurrection, and it's true the 14th Amendment said whatever it said, but it was not binding on the state, and there was nothing in state law that allowed the Secretary of State not to list him on the ballot if the Republican rules listed him on the ballot. Strikes me that that's exactly what the liberal commentators who say that the Supreme Court should keep him on the ballot but find some way of doing so that condemns him, that's exactly what they're calling for, that approach.
Well, we'll have to see. Like I said,
let's assume they did that. What are the political implications of doing that? What the liberals assume, the liberal commentators assume, the jurors assume, is that if he's knocked off the ballot, there'll be civil war. There'll be such dissension. It'll be worse than Gore.
Bush v. Gore.
And Bush. That's right. It'll be worse than that. Well, but what's the consequences of having him on the ballot? Wouldn't it be just as bad or even worse?
Well, we know that the Trump supporters are more violent in their means. We've seen that at rallies and what have you. But we can't discount things.
But the president of the United States disposes of more violence. He has more violence at his disposal than the Trump people have. He has the army. He has the National Guard.
Sure.
He's got the atom bomb.
You know. Let me just get back to what we're saying. What I was just saying, is the Supreme Court going to limit this to just Colorado then?
Well, that's another way of handling it, right?
And the fact is that is really doesn't really change things because Colorado is likely to be a blue state.
Right.
You know, they're talking about now the Attorney General of California wants to have that. Well, what's the difference? It's not going to matter if Trump's on the ballot in California or not.
Michigan matters. Ohio matters.
Michigan matters. Ohio.
Pennsylvania matters.
Pennsylvania matters. So the question is, where is this going to go? And but also, if there's not a president on the top of the ticket, if there's not a presidential race, that affects turnout. It affects the down ballot races, so to speak. So you've got all these little nuances and ifs and ands.
Supposing they don't let him, let's take this. Supposing they don't let him get on the ballot, does he run? It's easy to spell Trump. Does he run a write-in campaign?
Well, that's
do the write-in votes get counted? The court ruled that he can't be on the ballot. Does it matter?
Well, that's what the Republicans in Colorado want to do. Is they want to have? They said, okay, we're not going to have a primary. We'll just have a convention to nominate him. We'll have to see. We'll have to see. And I'm sure that the Attorney General will issue a ruling saying no, he can't be on the ballot. He can't have our electoral votes. So
can't have the electoral votes. Therefore, they can have a write-in campaign, but the votes can't be counted. Or even if they're counted, they can't. Right. They can't count in the electoral vote.
Yeah. Don't forget the states govern election their own elections. Back in 1860, Abraham Lincoln wasn't on a lot of ballots down south. He couldn't appear on them, and he still won the election. So we'll have to see. And of course, there's the movement to keep Joe Biden off the ballot. They say, well, we can do it, but the thing they forget is, under what constitutional principle can you keep him off? You can't keep him off on policy difference.
No,
you can keep him off if he's under 35, if he hasn't been a resident for 14 years, if he's not a natural born citizen, if he hasn't engaged in insurrection. But those are the qualifying things for a president. If your reason to keep him off the ballot doesn't fit in one of those, you just can't do it.
So what do you think? The letter of the law governs or the political situation governs?
I think they wind up letting him on the ballot. Somebody is saying that they're going to try to, Roberts is going to try to get this to be a 9-0 opinion. Lots of luck on that. It's possible. But with this, with the way the court is, I could see if it's a 9-0 that there may not be a majoritarian opinion. There might
be seven opinions.
Yeah, there could be seven opinions. And then the other thing is, does anybody cite Bush v. Gore? Which the Supreme Court said you can't cite.
Well, it said you can't cite it, right?
But on the other hand, it is principle that the court can decide an election case.
Right. Right.
Which,
So what about the argument that you shouldn't follow the Supreme Court and that states have the way to absolute authority not to follow the Supreme Court? There are people who say that.
Yes. Yes. Well, Alabama just said that in the case about reapportionment.
That's right. They said it twice, right?
Yeah, yeah.
We know better.
Know better. We'll have to see. We'll have to see.
What does that do to the American political system as we understand it?
Exactly. The new year will bring things.
Let's take a look at Michigan. A kind of a sidestep, but the same kind of thing. It deals with the courts. And Wisconsin.
Wisconsin.
Wisconsin, where the new court said the maps are no good. They have to be redrawn.
Well, but these were not the congressional maps. These were the state legislature maps.
Right.
But, you know.
But even so.
One of those. One of the, and it's interesting because Wisconsin, which is essentially a 50-50 state, where the Republicans have gerrymandered so they have a virtual veto-proof legislature.
Yeah, they have two-thirds of the upper of the lower house, and they have a 2-to-1 in the upper house.
Right. Right. So that what the Supreme Court in Wisconsin said was, we're going to send it back to the legislature. We'll give you a shot at doing this, and if you don't do it right. And what they said is really what the Pennsylvania Supreme Court said a couple years ago, that we're going to make these districts contiguous, evenly balanced in terms of voters, and we're not going, supposedly, not going to take in other political factors, but we can't. They can't be racially discriminatory either. And a lot of the, I understand that there's some legislative districts in Wisconsin that look like the salamander that we have, where the word gerrymander comes in. But some of them even skip over areas; they're not even contiguous.
Pennsylvania, they have islands in the midst of other districts.
Yeah, Pennsylvania's districts that are redone now are very contiguous and make a lot of geographic sense. So. We'll see what they do. And they said if the legislature doesn't do it, they probably won't do it, just like Ohio and Alabama's wouldn't do it and Louisiana's wouldn't do it. The court says we'll make our own.
Well, but the Republicans say if the court makes their own, they'll take it to the United States Supreme Court. Do they have the right to do that?
Yeah, they do, but the Supreme Court probably won't handle that. They probably won't have. They've got enough on their plate for those things. We'll see. We'll have to see.
Why do they have the right to do it? If the state has the right to determine its elections, then why does the Supreme Court have a right to mix in with their map?
There's under certain statutes, the civil rights statutes in particular, which they've kind of vitiated.
Yeah.
You know, they emasculated whatever you want to say, and we already have that case where they're, where the. The question was, should it be, how should it be decided? And Republicans now are trying to get it decided in a way that they opposed previously. It's all power and power plays, but that's what politics is in a sense.
Well, politics is making coalitions, temporary coalitions. No coalition is permanent. They're just temporary. Depends on the issue.
Yeah.
So, you support one thing in the now because of the issue, and then the opposite tomorrow.
Yeah, well, we don't have coalitions anymore because there's just so much division.
Except on the court.
Except on the court.
Apparently.
Well, we will see. And then the whole question is Clarence Thomas going to sit on these cases? Which, of course, he will.
Well, of course he will. Yeah.
But I don't know if you saw this week, we had that... further revelation about Thomas that he was complaining to conservative lawmakers that he may have to leave the court in essence because he wasn't making enough money and he was deep in debt.
He should have quit,
but they figured out the better way is to buy him off,
right,
with all these lavish gifts.
And, well, he knew his group.
Yeah, he was Machiavellian.
Yeah. Let me get back to the court business again.
Yeah.
With Giuliani. Now, here's a guy who gets convicted of lying about two women.
Yes.
Insulted them, defamed them.
Defamation.
Yeah, defamation. He admits it. He doesn't even contest it. He admits it. I did. I said things that were false. He says that.
Right.
So now the judgment is entered against him. He leaves the courtroom from the session at which the judgment is entered against him and defames them again. It says exactly the same thing. Now, what's the point of the law if there's no point, if you can just keep violating it?
Well, Yeah, well, there are sanctions. Number one, let's
right, that say $148 million. He can't pay it. What's the sanction?
I'm going to get to that in a second. Let me talk to you about the ideas and the sanctions. First of all, he didn't, despite what he said, is he says things out of court when he's not under oath. He won't go to court and say things under oath. Remember in the Pennsylvania cases, he was arguing for Donald Trump about fraud when we have the recording of that, when the judge in the Middle District of Pennsylvania asked him, is this a fraud case? He said no. Outside the courtroom, he talked about fraud. In the courtroom, he said no. This time he said he was going to testify in court. And right up the first day of trial, he said, you'll hear me tomorrow. And tomorrow came and he said, I'm not going to testify.
Right.
He wouldn't put his name under oath because he could be sanctioned for perjury or contempt of court.
That could send him to prison.
Yes. And then, as you said, he stepped out of the courtroom and he defamed these people again. So they sued him again. And this time they sued him for an injunction, not just for monetary damages, but to tell the court, to have the court tell him that he can't do this. And if they enter an injunction, then he could be held in contempt. But also, let me talk about the damages. Because, yeah, he doesn't have the money to pay these damages. And he declared bankruptcy. However, the bankruptcy doesn't cover everything. It doesn't cover punitive damages. So he can't wiggle his way out of everything on those things. We'll see how this plays out on things. And by the way, Donald Trump, remember, he was going to testify in the fraud trial in New York. And when the time came and the judge said, are you ready to take the stand? He said, nope, I'm not going to take the stand. Don't forget, and I've said this before, the GOP and these guys are great headline seekers. They want the headline. Most people only read the headline and hear the headline. They don't hear the follow-up story on paragraph 6 or 8 or 23 because they never get to it. As long as they get the
headline. This is assuming that they have a newspaper to read.
Yeah, well, yes, on that. We had that story about what's happened in Pennsylvania with the Scranton Times, and it's happening all over the country. As a matter of fact, we talked about before we went on the air, you don't have a real local paper up in Susquehanna County and didn't cover a major story about the fracking industry.
That's right. And we have no time to discuss it now. We have just a few seconds left, but we will discuss it next week.
Yeah,
it's a big item.
And we should discuss Scott Perry as well.
That's right.
Who's
and John Fetterman.
And John Fetterman.
Yeah, we got a lot to discuss. In fact, we better not get involved in any other thing right now.
No.
Because we're at the end of the time, and we'll get interested in what we're talking about, and nobody will hear it.
Nobody will hear it. But wish everybody a Merry Christmas. And next week we can be wishing them a Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, right.
And who knows what will happen in this last week of the year.
Well, we don't know, but we'll be ready to talk about it, so we'll see you next week.
We will see you next week. Take care.
You've been listening to Forward with Falk. Longtime Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen discuss politics. Join them again next week, same time, same place.